Brother Moses. Well, we'll say Prophet Moses, first of all, introduced my subject, and then Brother Moses introduced it. And it's not what I have to share this morning isn't really all that different from what we already heard. What is it that gives life significance? Or more importantly, let me ask you, what brings significance to your life? Or what do you do when it seems like life isn't significant? Where do you turn? How do you change that? And if you are finding your significance in God, how will your life look different than somebody who's finding their significance in the temporal? Will it look radically different, or kind of different, or a different shade of blue or green, or something to think about? I want to continue a little series I've been working on in James. I know it goes kind of long in between some of these. You can open your Bibles to James chapter 4. There's an old classic book called The Swiss Family Robinson that probably many of you have read. In that book, the family had just been shipwrecked, but they had all managed to safely land on an island. And after their first night on the island, the father took one of his sons with him to go explore their situation. They got their supplies and weapons and some food and items ready to go. They were just about to go. "Stop," I exclaimed. "We have still left something very important undone."
"Surely not," said Fritz.
"Yes," said I. "We have not yet joined in our morning prayer. We are only too ready amid the cares and pleasures of this life to forget the God to whom we owe all things." And so, having remembered their neglect, they paused and turned their plans over to God. Now, this sounds very much like the lesson that Brother James wants to teach us in James chapter 4, verses 13 to 17. Let's read these verses. "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life?" That's my title this morning. What is your life? "It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live, and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." What is your life? James answers it. He says it's vapor. It's like the steam that came off your coffee this morning. It was there for a little bit, and it was gone. That's it. What's the context here that James is writing to us? Well, we know that one of the main themes of his epistle is faith. True faith that exemplifies itself or shows itself in a life of works. A life that is living for God. Faith without works is dead. He also talks a lot about wisdom. He says, if you lack wisdom, ask of God. He talks about in chapter 3, wisdom that's from above, wisdom that's from beneath. So as we think about faith, we think about wisdom, one of the things that he wants us to understand, and the audience that he was writing to, is that God cares more about just the outward expression of our lips. He cares more about more than just what we say, but he is looking for a faith that's real. He's looking at heart issues. He's looking at things that are our perspective of life. Do we look at the world and say, all's right? Do we look at our own hearts, our own lives, and say, with God, all's right? But he contrasts here. One of the things he's painting for us, he recognizes how easy it is for us to lose our perspective, to have a very, very short perspective. And he says, don't take that temporal perspective that's so default to human nature, but you have to look beyond. Look to that which is eternal, because we are this little vapor, and God is everything. He is eternal. He's everything. And we're so nothing. And he says, if you're going to be significant, if life is going to be significant, it's not going to be in this vapor, right? It's going to be in God. And it's going to be when we trust in the sovereign grace of God. And I think it's something that we as Christians really do need to look at often. I need to look at often. I so easily lose that perspective. It is so easy, I think, especially in the times that we live in, from COVID to presidential elections, we just realize how unsettling this world is, how unsatisfying, how quick it is to change. We can't place our faith and our dreams and our hopes in this life and in the temporal and in even this country. We just can't do it. We have to turn to God, turn to His Word, find our guidance, find our anchor, find our hope in the eternal. But particularly, what I think we struggle with, I think, at least for myself, maybe it's not for you, it's easy to identify God in our spiritual lives. We come to church and we worship, we open the Bible, and we find God real. I think we do. I know we do. But what about in our business lives? That's particularly what James is talking about here. He says, your business dealings, when you say, I'm going to go and I'm going to buy this piece of equipment and I'm going to start this job and I'm going to make money and I'm going to take out a loan and I'm going to pay that off, and when it's done, then I'll have this much left over. Wait, he says. Do you realize what you're saying? Are you acknowledging God in that area of your life as well? That's the question. Now, what I do want to acknowledge this morning is that we do need to make plans. We live lives, and calendars are important to us. We print a lot of calendars at the print shop, and if you've never printed a calendar, you kind of take for granted that the calendar that's hanging on your wall is correct. When you book a ticket to fly out somewhere, and you circle that date on your calendar, you assume that October 13 is on a Thursday, and if my calendar says it, that that's true. Now, a lot of us use our devices, and we hope they're true as well. But every once in a while, we make mistakes. And when we print calendars, we always have somebody else look over our work, because it's embarrassing when it's wrong. And if customers make plans according to a misprinted calendar, it is not good. Not good. But we work on the assumption that a calendar works, and that dates come and dates go. They're laid out in months, and we believe that seasons will change and this will happen and years will turn over, and we do work under that assumption. But don't forget, and we'll look at this more, but life is frail. And again, I think COVID has really helped to bring that out in my life. Things change so quickly. We think the economy is set and secure, and all of a sudden things can change. There are events planned that just are gone like that. So life is frail, but life also happens so fast. We were at a wedding yesterday. One of my friends who did not marry until he was over 40 years old, and which is fine. And it's a beautiful thing to see God bring that together. But I started looking at how much changed in the last 20 years, 19 years since I got married, and now he got married, and I have children, and I have a 17-year-old almost this week. And you just realize how brief life is. It's almost like life we're going, you almost have to think of life as if it's a slow motion video. And what we're actually seeing happen is just happening in slow motion, but in reality, it's that quick and it's over. What are we doing with it? That's what James wants us to think about. Are we actually doing what's important? Are we giving precedence to the things that matter? Or are we just living life as it comes and we just enjoying what we want to enjoy and what feels good at the moment? What are we doing? Let's look at 7 thoughts from these verses this morning. Number 1, the wisdom of the world tempts us with self-sufficiency. It's one of the things that the world appeals to us in, and even the wisdom of the world says, you can be self-sufficient. You can pad yourself with the comforts of life. You can educate yourself. You can come up with a good enough plan and a backup plan, and you can be self-sufficient. There's this big push to live off the grid. Self-sufficiency. I don't need the rest of the world to survive. I've got a plan, and I'll carry it out. Well, James says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Now, too many people don't even understand that they're lacking wisdom. But when we come to this point where we realize how quick life goes past and how easily I get wrapped up in the non-essentials, we say, Lord, give me wisdom. Teach me what it means to rely on you. What is your wisdom? What is your perspective on life? In Psalm 10, the psalmist writes, the wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. He hath said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. That's what so many people in our world, that's actually the place they want to come to. Like, okay, now I'm at a position where I can face anything. I have a security system at my home. And I have fire alarms, and I've got it covered, okay? Really. Psalm 118, verses 8 and 9. It's better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in princes. Where's our confidence this morning? Is the wisdom of the world pulling us into self-confidence, self-sufficiency? Are we the church of Laodicea? Revelation 3:17, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. Need of nothing. Self-sufficiency. The world offers that, but it doesn't. The world paints a picture of that, but it's not. It's not. Because, number 2, the truth is, we simply do not know what will happen tomorrow. Control is an illusion. We don't really control our lives. Yes, we plan. We circle dates on the calendar. But we don't control our lives. We really don't. And the thing that highlights that in particular is death. When you think about death, and you think about how everybody comes to the grave. Everybody reaches at some point, comes to this place where life is over. Life ends and eternity with God or without God begins. Death is the great equalizer, we say sometimes. And it's just a reminder that we don't know. We don't know what happens tomorrow. Now, for many people, this fuels anxiety, and it fuels a lot of worries, and it fuels stress. So what do? Well, I think that this whole idea of control is pitched to us through advertisements all the time. You can control your health. You can control, you know, here's diet plans. Here's apps. You can control, you can control your finances. You can control your control your grill remotely, right? It's just so much that's at our fingertips that we say we can control until we really realize we don't actually control these things so quickly. We just don't know. Tomorrow is unknown to us. We don't know what will happen. Control is outside of our reach. We need to understand that life is uncertain, life is brief, and life can be snuffed away at any moment. Control is an illusion. There's a better way to live. Number three, life on earth is short and fragile. Another thing that James wants us to remember. We talked about it already, but life is short and life is fragile. Moses already referred Psalm 90, where it says life is a tale. Or my side margin says it's a sigh. It's like, it's over. Okay? There's other metaphors in the Bible. 2 Samuel 14 says that life is like water spilled on the ground that cannot be gathered up again. Dump a glass of water on the ground. No way to really pull it back together. It soaks in, it dries up, and it's gone. That's 2 Samuel 14, 14. 1 Chronicles 29, 15. Life is like a shadow. Almost like elusive, like hard to get a hold of because it's gone. Job 7, verses 6 and 7. Life is like a wind. Job 9, 25 and 26. Life is like, he says, a post. Or almost like a postman. Or you think about how messages were carried by horseback for many years. And they would, or runners. And they'd come through the town with their cry. And they were on to the next town. And life is just like that. You hear it, and it's gone. He also compares life to a swift ship. And to a swooping eagle that swoops down, catches its prey, and disappears. And it's gone. Job says that life is like a flower. Psalm 103 says life is like grass that grows up, in the evening it's cut down. Psalm 114, life is like a breath. And here in James 4, verse 14, life is like a vapor. I'm going to give one more metaphor. And I have an object lesson with me. You think you could help me, Jacob? Just for a minute? Can you just take this rope and take it back as far as it will reach? Just a second, hold on. I'll get this. I'll unwind it as you go. Go ahead. Nope, slow down. It's tangling almost a little. We might have a big tangle. Go ahead. Keep going. Almost there. Okay. You can just let it lay right there. Thank you. You can come sit down. I know that all metaphors fall short, but I want you to think with me this morning about this part of the rope, first of all. Imagine that. We said life is like a vapor. You're born here, and you die right here. What all happens in between? It's a different amount of things for different people. But you just think about your life so far. What all has happened? Here you're born, started going to school, gave your heart to the Lord, got married, we moved, became a grandpa, and then life's over. Now, the question is, are we thinking about the rest of the rope? That's really what James wants us to think about. When he says, life's like a vapor, he says, I want you to be concerned about this part because the decisions that I make and the decisions that you make and the choice that you make in here that determines where you will spend this part is important, but don't forget about this part. Are we planning for this part? Are we planning for eternity? Because this is all we got. This is all we got here. We're born and it's over. Like that. We flew home from Idaho a week ago, approximately. And while we were sitting at the airport, I got a message from my brother, who was also flying. And maybe some of you heard this story, but they were headed down the runway, full throttle, and engine quit, or at least threw an error, and they had to shut off the engine right in the middle of the runway. Stop. Abort the flight. Go find another plane because we have an engine going out. The pilots that were there on that flight, one of them said it had never happened to him before, and the other one said it happened once before. But as I sat in the airport, and as I boarded my plane, you can believe me, I was thinking about that. That particular flight, I sat right in the middle of the plane, above the wing. And I know wings flex, and I think airplanes flex a little. But I have to admit, I felt like the whole plane was like creaking on the center. I was just thinking about every creak and every noise. And I looked around me, and I looked at all the people on that plane. And I just said, what if? Who on this plane is ready to go? And what about me? You know, those are good reminders for us. Those are good reminders for me because it could have been that day. It could have just as easily happened. That engine could have gone out mid-flight instead of mid-runway. Could have. Life is a vapor. Life is short. Life is fragile. And let me tell you this. We are one event away from eternity. That's it. We're one event away from eternity. Number four. We need to move our focus from the temporal to the eternal. Verse 15, he says, but you ought to say, in other words, hold on a moment. Let's change this around. Don't say that. You ought to say this. And he indicates a move of focus, a move of attention. He's not condemning all assertions about the future. He's not saying don't plan. Neither is he saying that this little phrase, if the Lord wills, is some magic phrase to add to the end of every plan. But he's saying, move your focus from this part of the rope to that part of the rope. Think about eternity. Think about what does last. Think about what does have value. He's speaking to matters of the heart. And he's saying, always remember, even in this part, your future's unknown. Even though it's so short and we think that we can plan it, we really can't. We really can't. Now, we should say, if the Lord wills. That is part of shifting our focus. That is a good reminder for us to say, we're going to do this evening, Lord willing. If the Lord wills, we're going to do that. That's a good thing. But more than that, what that's supposed to do for us is to shift how we think, more than just verbally, to where we really believe that God is sovereign and God is in control and God has a plan for my life beyond what I can see, and I am dependent on Him. That's how we should plan, and that's how we should pray. He says, you don't even know if you're going to get a breath for the next day. You just don't know. What is your life? So what is eternal? What should we be focusing on? What is it that actually lasts? Well, of course, God. And a relationship that we start here in time, God invites us to continue in eternity. So focus on that. A relationship with God, yes, it does happen in time, but it's something that's eternal. It's something we can take with us. Laying up treasure in heaven is something that's for the eternal. We should do that, yes. First Corinthians says all these things are going to pass away, but charity's going to endure. Love. So love each other. Love your children. Teach them about the eternal. These are eternal things that we can do. Shift our focus from the temporal to the eternal. That means when we do go to buy equipment, when we do go to buy and sell, that we'll think about more than today or tomorrow. But we'll think about, is this going to help me into eternity and to prepare for eternity? Number five, God invites us to trust Him to rewrite our plans. God invites us to trust Him to rewrite our plans. Suppose these were my life plans, my business plans, your family plans, your life plans, your marriage plans, whatever. We make plans. We don't always put them down on paper and say, these are my plans, but we make plans. And there's a sense in which maybe it would be good for us to write down our plans and then take them to God in prayer and say, this is what I'm planning, but I invite you to rewrite them. Because you know so much more than me. You are the one that can write my plans much better than I can. It doesn't take away the responsibility of planning, but it needs to be that attitude of, here are my plans, Lord, for the day. You're welcome to rewrite them. You're welcome to change them. You're welcome to completely do away with them. You're welcome to take me home where I don't need these plans anymore. I'm in your hands. The question is, are we willing to trust God with this? Can we actually give that to Him and say, I don't care how you write it. Write it for me. When I was a child, I always hated blindfolding games because I never trusted my cousins. There was always water involved or something, right? But if I had surgery and I had eye surgery and had to be blindfolded, and my wife were to lead me around, I'd be very confident because I trust her more than my cousins. Question is, it's a sense in which we're blindfolded in life. The amount that we know is almost like a blindfold, right? Can't see. We actually can't see tomorrow. Tomorrow's almost a miracle or a mystery. Even though it keeps coming, it has. It won't always. Do I believe that nothing happens outside the sovereign hand and will of God? Do I believe that not one breath is taken outside of God's control? Do I believe that not one baby is born, not one life is taken, not one diagnosis outside of God's providential hand? If I believe that, then I'll trust Him. He has the wisdom. He has the justice. He has the power. He has the love, the understanding, the authority, the awareness to see that His will come to pass. And we don't just slap Lord willing on the end, but we believe and we trust the heart of God. And then we do say, Lord willing, as well. Consciously and deliberately submitting our plans to the only one who has complete control of everything. Oh, God, help us. Number six, presuming on tomorrow without a thought of God is, what does James say? It's evil. Presuming on tomorrow without a thought of God is evil. Verse 16, but now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. I'm going to read you a story from Luke chapter 12. You may turn there if you'd like. You don't need to. Short story. We call this man many times the rich fool. Luke 12, verse 16. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, This is what I'll do. I'll pull down my barns, I'll build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. What did this man forget? What was the one thing that he forgot? Well, he forgot that he wasn't God. Maybe he didn't think that he was God. Maybe he did. That sounds kind of harsh to say that we think that we're God when we don't give any thought, allow God in our plans for tomorrow. But that's really kind of what we're doing. We're saying, I've got this. I can handle this. I am in control. Like I said, it's an illusion. But he presumptuously laid up for himself everything except for a dependency on God. He forgot that. The God who was sovereign. He didn't give a thought to what might happen. He just said, This makes the most sense. I need more room. I'm going to advance my business. I'm going to grow my business. And he forgot about God, and it cost him his soul. He lost everything in one night, including his own soul. And our lives are just as that man was, in the sense that our lives are on the line as well. Any particular day or night, God could say, This day, your soul's required to show up in eternity. Today. Isaiah says that, it's not really a compliment, but he says that our breath is in our nostrils. And he paints this picture that can pinch your nose for a few minutes and you could be gone. I mean, that's how fragile it is when you stop and think about it. We need constant supply of air or we're gone. And if we don't, if we don't acknowledge that and acknowledge God in that, he says it's evil. Don't boast about tomorrow. You don't know what a day will bring forth, the proverb writer says. And so, please, let's not boast. Let's not forget God. Let's not presume on tomorrow without a thought of God. Sure, let's keep making plans. Let's use our resources to help people, but don't forget about God. Number 7. And I take this from the last verse. The sin of omission is still sin. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. We can kind of look through scriptures and look at all the sins of commission, where it says the disobedient and the idolaters are going to have their part in the lake of fire. Put off anger. Put off pride and arrogance and, okay, these are the things, don't commit these things. Or they'll take you away from God and they'll take you to hell. But James says it's also a sin to know what is the right thing to do and not to do it. And he's saying it in the context of us knowing who God is and knowing that life is short. And knowing that the rope is that long, that eternity goes on and on and on. And yet, we'll just live our lives like we want to. We'll just omit that part. He says, it is sin. And it is arrogant. Who do we think we are? Again, this tiny invisible virus has just showed us how small we are and how vulnerable we are. How vulnerable life is. Life can change dramatically at any moment. And for us to plan and to act and to work like this isn't true and like it doesn't really matter how I live my life and doesn't really matter what's to come, is sinful arrogance. And so, God is calling us today to readjust our thinking, to reprioritize our life, to reorder the details of our life, to include God. Yes, we need to include God, but let's not just tack him on to our plans. Let's approach him and give him our plans and say, you order my life, you plan my life as only you can, because trust him. And because when God is in his heaven, then everything will be all right. And not just the world, but my life will also be all right. Let's make sure that we open ourselves to the blessing of God by including him in our plans, in our lives. Let's believe in his sovereignty and trust his heart. We know these verses by memory, but I just want to read them to you. Read them together if you want to turn there, but Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, 6, and 7. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding in all thy ways. Yeah, it happens fast. But in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. God bless you each as you fear God, trust God, and let God write the plans for your life.